Arkansas, grew up in North Little Rock, Arkansas, and North Little Rock, Arkansas is my home. I'm an Arkansas native and love it.
And Mr. Bell, I'm wondering if we can start there at the very beginning, because I think your name is synonymous with Memphis and Stax and a certain kind of sound.
Yes.
But your roots are right here in the natural state, right here in Arkansas.
It's ironic. I was born in Brinkley, Arkansas, you know, which is the home of Louis Jordan, who's a distant cousin of mine. And then just 10 to 15 miles away, Cotton Plant, Arkansas, is where Sister Rosetta Tharpe was born, who was the first electric guitar player out here that influenced gospel, rock, blues, and everything else under God's sun. In Arkansas, and at Scipio A. Jones High School and radio station KOKY, and all of these nightclubs that are around the state of Arkansas. That's where my love for music and my understanding of how people appreciated music, because I can't sing, I can't dance. I mean, I can't carry a tune in a vacuum pack can, but I can feel and I can hear that those are God-given gifts. I can hear great performances, and I studied the music.
Being able to feel music, being able to have an ear especially tuned to a certain kind of sound, and then those storytelling abilities that you were able to hone as a radio jock. I'm wondering how all of that melded together to create Stax. What was the genesis of this music empire that you created?
Well, I think as it relates to Genesis, that was the genesis, because what happened was, as I was sitting here in Little Rock, Arkansas, I became very popular on KOKY, and people would come in from Chicago, from Houston, Texas, Memphis, Tennessee, Atlanta, Georgia, New Orleans, bringing me records to play. And I said, what are these people driving all the way here and wanting to take me out to lunch and stuff like that? They got to be making some money with this stuff. So I'm still, you know, I'm just fresh out of high school. So I started investigating, going to Moses Melody Shop, which is our big record store in town, asking them about their business. And they told me about their wholesale distributor in Memphis, and I'd go and learn about that and talk to them. And for some reason, the people were kind and would share the information with me. So I began to learn the business side, at the same time learn more about why people reacted to music, because I would do, back then, what you call record hops or discos, where at night I would play in different clubs and things around town here and in Memphis when I got to radio in Memphis. And I saw how people reacted to music and the role that music played really in people's lives. So the combination of understanding that, and meaning how music affected people, and it gave me really the ability to begin to appreciate how to approach marketing music from a social science standpoint. But on one occasion, I was asked by Jim Stewart to come to Memphis, Tennessee, and take over radio promotions at Stax, because they were about to go under. He felt like that I was respected by disc jockeys and that I had a good ear for music. And Jim said, my sister Estelle Axton, the AX on Stax, and I have agreed, Al, that if you would come in here and take over promotions and marketing for the company and turn it around, or help us turn it around, we'll give you an equity interest in the company. Well, it was $90,000 in the hole, but I came in and in 9 months took it from $90,000 in a hole to $1.5 million gross revenue at 12% royalty. It was distributed by Atlantic, and that was the royalty rate.
And I think one of the things that historians and just people in general constantly talk about in terms of that Stax sound under your leadership is that not only did you have feel-good music, but you had socially conscious music that kind of spoke to the times.
Yes.
Which was a very interesting time in American history, tumultuous in some ways as well. Delve into that a little bit. How important was it to actually have music with a message?
Well, it was very important, because my belief and experience was that, particularly as it relates to African-American music at that time, it reflected what was going on in our lives, our lifestyle, and our living. And I set out to ensure that the writers and the producers always kept that in mind, and as they wrote the songs and as they produced the records, that make sure that there's something that's relevant and that people can relate to, and make sure, examine your lyrics, examine your performance, and make sure that it's something that fits into people's lives.
I've been hearing some interesting stories about the song I'll Take You There and your role in that song in particular. What were some of your high points during your time at Stax?
There were several high points. The I'll Take You There was a high point. That was a song that was written through me. I've written songs, but I hastily acknowledged that the creator of the universe wrote that song through me after the murder of my second brother. I had a problem reconciling death and in dealing with that. And after the burial and all that kind of stuff, I was sitting on the hood of the bus, and all of a sudden, I know a place, ain't nobody crying, ain't nobody worried, ain't no smiling faces, lying to the races. I'll take you there. I'll take you there. There's only one verse in that song. I tried to go back and write other verses, but I couldn't. But some of my memorable and most memorable moments was in being able to put together Watch Stacks, where at that time when you just had the what they call the Watts Riot, which was really the Watts Rebellion that had taken place in Los Angeles, we seized the opportunity to put on an event there at the Los Angeles Coliseum, and at a time when, generally speaking, white America would get concerned and nervous whenever two or more blacks were together, particularly law enforcement officials, I decided to put that event on there in the Los Angeles Coliseum, and we did put 112,000 people in there and filmed a documentary that has become legendary, if you will. So that was a highlight and something that I'll always remember, and I'm thankful for having an opportunity to do it, and then to go on and win a motion picture a title song Oscar on Shaft.
Let's talk about one of your new initiatives, this Artist Career Development and Entertainment Creation Company.
What I saw happen to our industry, and I saw it happening in 1999, that the industry started putting in place a mass merchandising model, which meant they de-emphasized rare artists. It was like McDonald's or Burger King or whatever, another one like the other one. And I said, I have to put something in place that allows us to continue to evolve as an industry, but let our rare talent have an opportunity to still be able to get involved in the industry. And when I say rare, I mean one of a kind, authentic artist, and not the mass merchandising type. We're not a record company. We're not a production company. We're not a management agency or booking agency. We get involved where we develop their entire career. Music is very important. And the relationship that we have with them is a business relationship. It's not royalty relationships, anything like that. We put them in business and work with them in that business. So we grow the business together, and they have something substantive so that ultimately it will become an annuity for them when they don't feel like performing anymore. They've built and created assets that they own that continue to generate, you know, revenue for them.
Since we've talked also about some of the negativity that exists right now in the music industry in terms of always trying to mass produce a sound or an image, that cookie cutter approach, what are some of the positives looking forward in terms of the music industry?
For the first time in the history of our industry, our people, meaning music appreciators, are being able to hear and appreciate more music than ever before. They're able to go online and hear music that was recorded in the 1940s, and not just in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. They're not dependent, or the only place they can hear music is on radio, and it's what radio is programming. They're able to hear music all over the place.
Business icon, music icon. I think what you have to be called is a Renaissance man, Mr. Bell.
Thank you. I'm humbled
Bell.
By that.
Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, and I'd like to talk to you from time to time. Thank you so much.